Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody. Damn, I'm all set today. I'm ready to go today. This jacket is a bit of a fail, huh? The coat I'm wearing, it appears like the sleeves are too short. Look at that. Look at that. I don't know if the shirt underneath is too long and this is too short, or if this is just too short, or maybe if this is just too long. Wow, that's really sad. Here, I'll hide it. I'll hide it. I gotta sit like this the whole show, like a T-Rex. Oh, no wonder. I knew there was a reason I don't wear this particular coat often. I knew there was a reason. Now we figured it out. Sleeves are too short. That's a damn shame. That's weird, because I got the same size I normally get. Okay, whatever. I'm getting caught up on what I'm wearing in the first minute of the show here. A lot of stuff to talk about today, ladies and gentlemen. So official, ladies and gentlemen. The Trump administration is planning a crackdown that should worry us all. We also have... There are whispers in Washington about how Republican-on-Republican violence will be put in overdrive. So that would be a sight to see. Now, I'll tell you what my ultimate takeaway from that story is, but that's the news. The news is that there are some coups being plotted in Washington among Republicans. We also have Howard Dean, who used to be a pretty solid lefty. He was the Bernie Sanders of the 2004 Democratic primary. Then he sold out and became the biggest joke in the world. And we're going to talk about him lecturing the left. Oh, man, well, I have some scorn for him. And do you guys remember Blackwater, the mercenary army that we paid to go into Iraq? Well, wait until you hear what happened with a bunch of people from Blackwater who were found guilty of murder. Wait until you hear what happened, because this is just, I mean, you want to talk about disheartening, you want to talk about the feeling that there's no justice. When I give you the story on that, it'll feel exactly that way. All right, let's get started. And we'll do that with the Trump administration crackdown on my brethren. Yes, on my brethren. Here we go. The Trump administration is planning on coming after journalists. This is from Reuters. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions, taking up an issue that has infuriated Republican President Donald Trump, went on the attack against the leaks on Friday, warning of a possible crackdown on reporters, crackdown both on reporters and their sources inside the federal government, in a move derided by critics as an attack on the free press. Sessions said the administration was reviewing policies on forcing journalists to reveal their sources. It is, however, difficult to prosecute members of the news media in the United States for publishing leaked information. Sessions also told the employees of government agencies to stop leaking and called the issue a matter of national security. Trump has repeatedly voiced anger over a steady stream of leaks to the media about him and his administration since he took office in January. Okay, so this is the biggest load of horse shit I've ever seen. That's what the government's always going to hide behind. That's always going to be their go-to move to hide behind it, so that they can try to conceal more information from you that they shouldn't be allowed to conceal. Oh, national security, national security, national security risk. Oh, my God, national security. Oh, my God, if you run with that story, ISIS is going to attack Toledo in about 7 minutes. That's just not true. So what he's referring to, the recent round of leaks that got quite a bit of coverage, it was President Trump's conversation with the Australian Prime Minister. Prime Minister or President in Australia? Whatever. The Australian leader. There we go. And it was his conversation with the Mexican president. And we covered the story with the Mexican president because he said to the Mexican president, yeah, look, the wall is going to be the least important thing that we talk about. But please stop telling the press that you're not going to pay for it. Because I told everybody you're going to pay for it. And I said you're not going to pay for it. So that exposed him as a little bitch. He was a little bitch. And he was groveling. And he also said the wall is really not that important. So that was big news. And then with the Australian leader, I went with leader that time, he was saying, no, do I have to accept, apparently under Obama we made a deal to accept a certain number of immigrants that came through Australia. And Trump was supposed to honor that deal, and he was talking to the Australian leader and saying, I don't want to really abide by that because it makes me look bad. And the guy's like, dude, you got to abide by it. He's like, fine, you know what, if I have to take them, I'll take them, but I don't want to do it, and I don't want to abide by it, and I don't like it. You know, he had two phone calls. Now, in terms of what's actually threatening to national security in those calls, nothing. Absolutely nothing. So the fact that the content of those calls were leaked is irrelevant. It just makes the leaders butt hurt because they feel like, I have no privacy. Bitch, you don't have a right to privacy. You ran for public office. When you are conducting public duties, stop. Let's be serious here. It's a serious conversation. But when you're, you know, doing public work, if something happens to leak and there's nothing that's a real matter of national security in there, I file that under, okay, good. Good. This idea that, like, oh, you elect your leaders and then they can do everything in secrecy from you, that's total and utter horseshit. That's not how a democracy is supposed to work. You're supposed to have transparency. So all the crying and whining and bitching and national security. No, that's not true. Stop being a precious little snowflake who's triggered by the microaggression of people actually knowing what the fuck you're doing with your goddamn time. And don't try to, you know, make this a partisan thing. Oh, Kyle wouldn't say that if it was Obama in office. Bitch, yes, I would. It doesn't matter if it's Republican or Democrat. If they are talking about policy issues and there is actually nothing that's damaging to national security in the content of what they're talking about, of course the public should have a right to know what they're saying. That's a good thing. That's a positive thing. These are leakers. These are whistleblowers and leakers. These aren't like criminals who are violating the law. But nonsense. Notice the government will always, always, always try to make things classified or top secret if it makes them look bad. That's the go-to move, because then if it ever leaks, they go, well, now we're going to have to punish the people who leaked it. Because we said this was top secret and classified. You leaked it. Therefore, you're the criminal. And this is exactly the trick they did with Chelsea Manning. This is the trick that they did with Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden goes, hey, man, the government is not abiding by the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution. They're doing unreasonable searches and seizures everywhere and collecting everybody's metadata. I think the American people should know that. And the government goes, oh, how dare you? What you did was illegal. You leaked stuff. So kill the messenger. See exactly what they're doing there? Same thing with Chelsea Manning. Hey, look, here's a video of the U.S., our military, massacring civilians and journalists and laughing about it. Oh my God, I can't believe you released that. Illegal. We're going to lock you up. So, again, kill the messenger. Those are things that the public has a right to know what the government is doing with our money in our name. And what the government does is anything that they find embarrassing makes them look bad. Classified, top secret. Now, if you leak it, you're the criminal. But what if you're the criminal? Who's going to watch the watchmen? What if you're the criminal? What if the government is doing criminal actions? What if the government is just conducting regular government business, about public policy that the American people have a right to know about. What about that? No, they always want, no, see, no, we can't, don't leak that because then we're going to come after you. And that's exactly what Jeff Sessions said he's going to do here. Now, after the backlash over this, the State Department was like, no, did we say that we were going to come after? No, I don't know if we were actually going to come after, but we're saying that this is not good, but don't worry, we're not going to pursue legal action because of the First Amendment. We can't do that. But thank you for clarifying. We really appreciate that. No, of course they're going to do that. Jeff Sessions did a whole talk about it, saying, yeah, we're going to use whatever avenue possible to crack down on the sources of the leaks and reporters. So, and we warned you, man, we warned you. This reminded me of, what was it, David Gregory, back when he was the host of Meet the Press. And he had on Glenn Greenwald to chastise him and say, why shouldn't the government lock you up? Why shouldn't the government lock you up? And he was saying that because, hey, look, Edward Snowden, the stuff he gave to you to report on was illegal. Don't you have some responsibility for running with the illegal leaks? And at the time, every single one of us who's on the actual left said, whoa. Anybody who's, you know, cheerleading David Gregory saying maybe Glenn Greenwald should be locked up for being a journalist and doing his job, you have no idea what precedent you're setting right now. Because on top of just being unethical and immoral and wrong in that instance, you're setting a precedent where the government just, I don't know, if you leak anything we don't like, we're just going to say that's against the law, and we're going to try to lock you up. And now the chickens are coming home to roost in that you have an administration that the liberal elite class doesn't like, that the David Gregorys of the world go, oh, man, this guy's nuts talking about Trump. Now you've opened the door and you've given that guy the power to go after not just people who are leaking the information, but the journalists who report on it. And one of the main reasons they couldn't really go after Glenn Greenwald is because everybody ended up reporting on it. What are you going to do, take reporters from the Washington Post and the New York Times and every outlet imaginable and lock them up? So, I mean, now you see the authoritarian streak coming out. Obama was bad enough. He had a war on whistleblowers. He had a war on whistleblowers. Now we're talking about a war on whistleblowers and a war on journalists, and you have explicit threats being made about we'll pursue legal action if we see any more leaks. You know damn well if this was under Hillary Clinton, if Hillary Clinton was president and people were leaking conversations she was having with other world leaders, and there's no real damaging national security information in there, would Jeff Sessions be like, oh, come on, ladies and gentlemen, what are we doing? We must go after these leakers. No, they'd be encouraging them. Why? Because people like this are partisan hack idiots. And it's all about them cover up when we do things, but when others do, expose it when the Democrats do it. No, let's be consistent. Let's be principled. Yes, the people who leak information, that's good as long as you're actually not leaking like the nuclear fucking launch codes or something. Yes. Leaking that information is good. Reporting on it is good. And to be against that is to be against the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. Whether or not you realize it, whether or not you acknowledge it, if you want to crack down on whistleblowers, you want to crack down on the journalists who are reporting on this stuff, the problem is you, because you're clearly authoritarian. Next. All right, let me tell you. This one is interesting, man. This one probably raised some eyebrows. A weird story broke over the weekend about the next presidential race. Check this out. A Republican shadow campaign to potentially replace Trump in 2020 is underway, New York Times reports. Trump's already running for re-election, holding campaign rallies and seeking donations, but many in the party have been quietly prepping. But in interviews with more than 75 Republicans at every level of the party, elected officials, donors, and strategists expressed widespread uncertainty about whether Mr. Trump would be on the ballot in 2020, and little doubt that others in the party are engaged in barely veiled contingency planning. They see weakness in this president, said Senator John McCain, Republican of Arizona. Look, it's not a nice business we're in. John Kasich is reportedly ready to run again, even if the president does, though the Times report notes that the shadow candidates and their operatives have signaled that they are preparing only in case Mr. Trump is not available in 2020. Vice President Mike Pence, despite being vocally supportive of Trump, set up the Great America Committee back in May and, as the Times reports, is quietly prepping himself. Mr. Pence's aides, however, have been less restrained in private, according to two people briefed on the conversations. In a June meeting with Al Hubbard, an Indiana Republican who was a top economic official in Mr. Bush's White House, an aide to the vice president, Mary Obst, said that they wanted to be prepared to run in case there was an opening in 2020 and that Mr. Pence would need Mr. Hubbard's help, according to a Republican briefed on the meeting. Reached on the phone, Mr. Hubbard declined to comment. So now you have a lot of chatter. People are saying, ooh, what's happening here? Are we looking at maybe Pence 2020 splitting from Trump, going rogue, saying, I got this shit. I really want to be president anyway. That's what I want to do. Is that what we're looking at? Are we looking at, you know, John Kasich, hey, I'm going to take a run at this thing and I'm going to overtake Trump. And, you know, John McCain is whispering behind the scenes, look, people are making contingency plans, dude, because we don't know if Trump's going to last that long. He might be impeached, or he might not run for re-election, or there might be a million problems. So the Republican establishment behind closed doors is, all right, let's go after this thing, man. Let's make sure that everything's set up for when Trump falls. Is that what's happening? Okay. Let me tell you the reality about this story. Fake news. Fake news. Yeah, no. See, this is an instance of the Never Trumpers whispering in the ears of the establishment press people. That's what this is. So, you know, guys like Bill Kristol, neocons like Bill Kristol, Evan McMuffin, and David Frum, people like that. John McCain is in this crowd, Lindsey Graham as well, where they're Republicans who are part of the establishment, who don't like Trump for a variety of reasons, usually the dumbest reasons imaginable, and they want to get the word spreading. Like, seriously, remember how many times Bill Kristol was making an ass of himself and tweeting, hashtag peak Trump? He did it after, you know, the first round of polling came out. He did it after the first debate when Trump won. He did it after the fifth debate when Trump had won all the debates. He did it when Trump won his first primary. He did it every step of the peak Trump, peak Trump, peak Trump, peak Trump. And Trump kept winning. And then, you know, Bill Kristol has never been right about anything. Let's just get that on the record. He's the worst ever. Like, he's never been right about anything. Whatever Bill Kristol says, assume the opposite is totally true because it is. So you have guys like that who, it's wishful thinking, man. It's wishful thinking. After Donald Trump had gotten the nomination in the Republican primary, you had guys like Bill Kristol doing TV interviews saying, oh, maybe Mitt Romney will do a run as an independent, and then Mitt Romney will obviously win. I mean, if you're talking about Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton versus Mitt Romney, Mitt Romney's going to win if he runs as an independent. Number one, no, he'd get his ass handed to him on a silver platter, and you're too dumb and out of touch to realize it. Number two, he wasn't going to run after Trump got the nomination, you jackass. So this is that crowd going, oh, well, I heard from a friend of a friend of a friend who knows somebody in the administration that maybe Pence is going, oh, maybe I'm going to run on my own. The only thing that might be true is that they're thinking, hey, if there's whatever, some sort of impeachment proceeding and or Trump gets caught red-handed with some corruption shit, that we need to have some backup plans. Like, the only thing that might be true is the Kasich thing. How Kasich's like, yeah, look, I want to run, and I'm going to run no matter what. You know? But here's the thing. You're not going to get a successful – once you have an incumbent Republican president or Democratic president for that matter, if you try to primary them in 4 years, it ain't going to work, dude. It ain't going to work. The base is going to rally around their incumbent. So, and, you know, it was the same thing with Obama. If Obama had a primary challenger in 2012, it wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to work because he's already the incumbent president. He's the Democrat, and you're going to have the base is going to rally around. Not the base of the Democratic Party is in the strong left wing of the Democratic Party, but the loyalist Democrats are going to circle the wagons, and it's going to be obviously enough to get the guy who already won to be your main candidate to run against the Republican. So the same thing would happen here. So Kasich would just get destroyed on a level that's so hilarious that I actually kind of want to see it. So, John, run, because I want to see you just get absolutely obliterated and get your bubble burst and come back down to earth, because you're not as liked as the people in the D.C. bubble, the elite bubble, make you think you are. So the Kasich part might be the only part that's true, where he's like, yeah, I kind of want to run, and, you know, hey, I got to challenge him from the more moderate wing of the party or whatever. But all the other stuff is nonsense. In fact, Mike Pence came out and said, that's like one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. And remember, I've read about 8 other articles that go into detail about how loyal and subservient Mike Pence is to Donald Trump. Mike Pence is a weird dude, man. He's a weird dude. He's a tried and true far-right Republican. He credited his career to Rush Limbaugh. He went on rants about how evolution is wrong on the floor of the House. And this is a guy who went from relative obscurity in the sense that I think he was governor of Indiana at the time, and he was most known for signing an anti-gay bill and being massively anti-gay, and Trump put him on the map and said, hey, you'll be my VP. So I think he actually is super loyal to Trump. I really do. And I don't think he would ever do something like split from Trump when he's the VP. He might think on some level, hey, maybe I'll get to be president if something happens with Trump and he's got to step aside. But that he would actively plot against him and run against him, no, that's not happening. This is, again, the main point here, I think it's all wishful thinking of the Republican elites, the never Trumpers, the John McCains, the Lindsey Grahams, the Bill Kristols, the David Frums. You know, this is that crowd whispering in the ears of other D.C. journalists, and other D.C. journalists go, oh, I got to write an article about this. Ooh, I heard Pence is maybe thinking about splitting from Trump, and everybody, the Republican establishment, is lining up together. And by the way, here's the other angle of this. There were, like, the Republican establishment, they're just as out of touch and idiotic as the Democratic establishment, where they always think, like, no, we got this. We totally got this. Like with Hillary Clinton and, you know, her minion idiots in D.C. Like, oh, no, we totally got this. See, we have to run against Trump because we're the only ones that can win. Bernie Sanders can't win. He's old, and he's, like, Jewish and maybe an atheist and a socialist, and nobody likes him. I mean, we're the only ones who could win, so that's why you got to pick us. They always have this unearned sense of superiority. Like, we got this. What do you mean? Hillary Clinton, she's great. Now, the D.C. elites are the same. The D.C. Republican elites are the same. We got this. What do you mean? We can Jeb Bush. Jeb! Exclamation point. We got it, Jeb. We got it, Marco Rubio. Who doesn't like Marco Rubio? I mean, his last name's Rubio, so ooh, that's a little wild and a little ethnic. He might be a minority folk. So I'll say he's a Marco Rubio. He does exactly what we want. He's our little bitch to the corporations. But he's a little different, and he's young. So they're so out of touch that they think, like, oh, well, obviously, if we were to decide to challenge Trump in 2020, we would win. Even with Trump's monumentally low approval rating, any establishment Republican candidate you pick who's from the traditional establishment wing of the party would get their ass handed to them. It wouldn't even be close. It wouldn't even be close. It would be such a blowout, it would be comical. Yes, and that's even with Trump being historically unliked, because he still has a 31% approval rating, and that 31% ain't going nowhere, bitch. They're going to show up to the polls in the primary and beat the shit out of John Kasich or Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush or any other clown, just like when you threw them up against Trump in the first place, and they got thoroughly embarrassed. So, they really believe they always got this shit on lock, and they never do. And then the final point is, there's a few people who still don't get it. Like, there are other people in the Republican establishment who have figured out, oh, what? Okay, so Trump is rough around the edges, and he's impolite, and he says naughty words. But you know what? At the end of the day, it's fine, because the establishment, we're going to get what we want either way. Like, Goldman Sachs people have realized this, Steve Mnuchin, Gary Cohn, that's why now they're all working for him. A lot of these people who were from Goldman originally supported Hillary, but now they're backing Trump, and now they're in Trump's administration. Why? Because when push came to shove, he acts like an establishment Republican in terms of policy. So a lot of the establishment goes, yeah, well, he's our guy anyway. He's going to do what we want anyway. We're just going to have to deal with the impoliteness. Like, whatever, that is what it is, but he's still going to do what we want, so let's go in that direction. There's only a few in the establishment on the Republican side who go, yeah, no, because Trump's bad, like Bill Kristol and David Frum and people like that. So, again, I think this is wishful thinking from the same people who were the never-Trumpers from the beginning, and they think like, oh, yeah, now it's hashtag peak Trump, and it, you know, hey, man, he's not going to win the first debate. Okay, he won the first debate. He's not going to win more than one. He won the rest. He's not going to win a primary. He won the primary. He's not going to win the nomination. He won the nomination. He's not going to be the president. He became president. And now this is them going, yeah, he's not going to be run and get the second term. Look out, because what comes next? We have to try to prevent that last one, though, which is why we got to go all in on Justice Democrats. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. Let's get Justice Democrats elected all over the country, because the only way to beat the fake populist right is the actual populist left. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we got Howard Dean, we got Maxine Waters. Oh boy, today's show really is incredible. We got Jerry Brown from California. Yeah, you don't want to miss any of this, man. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Son of a bitch. All right, we're back, everybody. Okay, so we are going to get to Howard Dean. Is it just me, man? Is it just me, or does every Maroon 5 song sound the same? I mean, it's not just them, to be fair to them, but they're one of a few, like, groups, or some groups are like this, sometimes it's just individual artists, but everything they fucking do sounds exactly the same. Let me run that, I want to run that back. I'll give you my impression of Maroon 5. Here we go. And also, everything they say is totally unintelligible. Where, how, what's I why, wanting to live, wanna fly, morning, night, know my night, everyone, I know my night, little moan, know me, though, and them last minute blow. It doesn't make no sense. Oh, okay, that was funny. All right, Howard Dean, I got a video clip here for you, for this one. This one's special. Howard Dean is special. He's a special guy, isn't he? Howard Dean used to be a pretty solid lefty, or so it seemed. He was basically the Bernie Sanders of the 2004 Democratic primary. Now, I know it's, you know, crazy today to bring Howard Dean and Bernie Sanders up in the same sentence, but back then, you know, he really was. But then he lost the primary, and he sold out big time. In fact, he sold out in such a gargantuan way that he worked as a healthcare lobbyist. And now he's one of the biggest corporate tools out there. So here he is on MSNBC, and he's going to lecture the left about purity. Let's watch.
There has always been a section of the left, which I call the whiny party, the party that doesn't really want to win. They just want to be pure. And if they go down swinging purely, then that's fine. Well, the problem with that is it leaves behind the people who really need their help. If we're going to have a single payer or Medicare for all or whatever we're going to have in health care that covers every American, as every other industrialized country has, then we all have to pull together. And people who sit out or crank on some candidate because they did this or that or wasn't to their purity test are basically turning their back on the very people they pretend to represent. So I don't have a lot of patience with this wing of the Progressive Party. This is a media creation. The media sees conflict. It creates this to-do. There are not a lot of people that feel the way that you all described about Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
I think we just have to get a life and pull together and do what's right for the country instead of having these silly fights among ourselves, which I have to say are perpetrated in part by the media.
So this was in the context of talking about Kamala Harris, who is likely going to run for president in 2020. And the establishment is coalescing around her because she checks almost all the boxes. So in other words, the establishment, they love to put up a McLiberal. Why? Because they can pull the wool over everybody's eyes and go, oh, come on, what do you mean? We're giving you Kamala Harris and you're still going to say no? So in other words, Kamala Harris, let's keep it 100% real here, female, black, and has just enough on her record so that the establishment can look at progressives in the Democratic base and go, oh, what the fuck? What more do you want, man? What do you want? Now, when you dig deeper into her record, though, you find out very quickly, oh, there's a reason why the establishment loves her. because she's not a populist leftist. She's not a revolutionary. She's a corporatist. So, for example, she was the Attorney General of California. When she was the Attorney General of California, it was recommended by her own office, hey, you have to go after Steve Mnuchin, who was the Goldman Sachs banker. Then he led One West Bank in California, and now he's in the Trump administration. He's Treasury Secretary. But when he was the head of One West Bank, One West Bank was foreclosing illegally on people all over California, kicking grandmas out of their houses early. Kamala Harris said, I'm not gonna go after him. And then what happened? Steve Mnuchin gave campaign contributions to Kamala Harris. So she's a corporatist, and she's willing to play ball with Wall Street, and she's basically willing to be Hillary Clinton 2.0. So you have some good progressives, some populist leftists like Roseanne DeMauro, who pointed this out and said, no, she has a lot of problems, Kamala Harris, so let's not go down that road for 2020. And what happens? All the establishment Democrats and loyalist Democrats, partisans, come out and immediately claim racism and sexism. And then another dirty trick they do is they lump in other corporatists with Kamala Harris to try to further drive that point home. So there was an article recently. I forget who had it. I think it may have been in The Atlantic, but it had Deval Patrick, it had Cory Booker, and it had Kamala Harris, and it said, these are Democratic contenders for 2020, but there's a problem. They're going to have to win over the base, the Bernie bro wing of the party. And then you had people like Neera Tanden on Twitter going, well, you know, hey, what is it these three have in common? Gee, I can't figure it out. In other words, racist Bernie bros. They're fucking racist. They're fucking racist. Why else wouldn't you like Deval Patrick? And why else wouldn't you like Cory Booker and Kamala Harris? I mean, it must be because you're racist. They're all black. Isn't that funny? The same people who are ride or die for Nina Turner, the same people who were the loudest in support of Keith Ellison during the DNC leadership race, now they're being smeared as racists. Not a single one on the left, including myself, when we were pulling for Keith Ellison over Tom Perez in the DNC leadership race, did we say to Neera Tanden or her ilk, I guess you don't like black people. I guess you don't like black people because you're against Keith Ellison. See, we don't do that because we actually believe in policy ideas and substance, so we can argue on the merits of the policy ideas, and we can argue for our chosen candidates based on their policy ideas. Neera can't do that. Corporate Democrats can't do that. So they smear the second they think they have the opportunity. Oh, you don't like these three black corporate Democrats? I guess it's because they're black. That's why you don't like them. Not because they're corporate, because they're black. And now to bring it full circle here and talk about Howard Dean. First of all, there's a giant contradiction in the comments he makes there. Let's get to that right off the bat. He goes, I don't have much tolerance for this progressive base because they're whiny. I'll come back to that. He says, but I mean, think about it. If you want to do something like Medicare for All, we all have to pull together. Oh, that's right. That's right, Howard. But the second part of your statement contradicts the first part of your statement when you're saying, look at these guys. They're whiny and they want to be pure. They don't want to win. But anyway, if we want to do Medicare for All, we all got to come together. That's right. But Howard, what's the problem? The problem is idiots like you don't want single payer, don't want Medicare for All. So you're the one that's not unifying. Isn't that hilarious? It's their own arguments are never flipped back on them when they should be. You want to talk about unity? Okay, let's talk about unity. Why on earth would you not unify around Medicare for All when 61% of the American people want Medicare for All? What, do you want to unify around a less popular policy that doesn't have an overwhelming majority of the American people behind it? Is that what you want to do? Why would you not unify around the policy that's the most popular? Because you are, by definition, going to get the most people on your side, because most people are already on your side with that. So, yes, I want to unify. Do you want to unify? No, you don't want to unify. Because if you wanted to unify, you would unify behind the people's platform. I told you, what is it, over a dozen populist left, progressive groups, we unified. We unified around Medicare for All and free college and a variety of different policy issues. The people who are not unifying are the corporate Democrats. You're the ones who still want to be neoliberal. You still want to be corporatist. You still want to do the bidding of your donors, Wall Street, big pharma, for-profit health insurance companies. And then you lecture us like we don't want to unify? We're already unified. Come talk to us. Come talk to Democratic Socialists. Come talk to Justice Democrats. Come talk to People for Bernie. Come talk to Our Revolution. Come talk to everybody on the actual left. We're as unified can be. You're the one that's not unified because you don't believe in what the American people believe in. Never mind the left. 80% of the Democratic Party, actual people, want Medicare for All. And you're saying we shouldn't have Medicare for All. We shouldn't make that a litmus test. We shouldn't unify around that. So in other words, when you say unify, you mean unify around the same shitty ideas that lost to Donald Trump. Unify under Hillary Clinton's platform, which just got its ass handed to it. So he goes, yeah, they're whiny and pure. They don't want to win. Anyway, if we're going to do Medicare for All, we need to unify. That's right. So let's unify around Medicare for All. Do you want to do that? No, you don't. So shut the fuck up. And then, of course, the biggest part is, he said, they're whiny. Yeah, you know, I'm sure that was said a lot about civil rights activists, too. Whiny, look at this. Uppity you-know-whats that are in the South. And, you know, they're marching and they got their signs and they're sitting at diner counters that they don't belong at. They're so whiny. Just accept your place in society. And you say, come on, Kyle, you can't make that comparison to the civil heroes like the civil rights movement versus today. What, you don't think people who are fighting endlessly to get health care for everybody, cover everybody, end medical bankruptcies as a thing, save 45,000 lives every single year because today 45,000 die because they don't have access to basic health care? You don't think the people fighting for universal health care are heroes? Of course they're heroes. Of course they're heroes. So, yes, it is totally comparable. So, yeah, I'm sure people called them whiny back then. I'm sure they called women who wanted fighting for the right to vote. Ah, whiny. Why don't you just accept your place in society? Why don't you just accept the status quo as it is? That's Howard Dean. You know, whiny, whiny people on the left. So whiny. So whiny. And the biggest bullshit statement ever. They don't want to win. They just want to be pure. Well, sit down and take a load off, Howard Dean, because your mind is about to be blown. What if the polling data proves that the way to win is to be more pure? Wow, never thought about that, have you? Think about it. They've been running corporate neoliberal candidates for decades, and they have nothing to show for it. What do you have to show for it? So, under Barack Obama, the Democrats lost 1,000 seats. 1,000 seats all around the country. Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump, who was a joke, a punchline. The guy had a 60% unfavorability rating on the day that he won. So we run your style candidates for as far back as the eye can see. And you get wiped out. And then you have the nerve to say, yeah, stupid lefties. They don't want to win. They just want to be pure. No, apparently you don't want to win. You just want to be corporate. Because that's what it is. We got to stay true to our donors, our big money donors. So we got to not push for any policies that the American people like. And then now I'm going to turn around and scold the left and say they don't want to win. No, you don't want to win because we keep running your style candidates and we keep losing. So, no, the answer is yes, to be more pure means to win. So in other words, you need to have Democrats who actually make the case for free college, actually make the case for a living wage, actually make the case for ending the wars and Medicare for All and ending the drug war and doing a new deal for infrastructure spending, taxing Wall Street, raising taxes on the rich. If Democrats make the case for that, they can't lose. And they can't lose because the polls show the American people already agree with them. So you have to, all you have to have is somebody who's somewhat likable. Somewhat. Doesn't even have to be a lot. Could be like so-so. Hey, some people think he's a douche, some people like him. Somewhat likable. Mixed with, I agree with the policies the American people believe in, and you fight for that tooth and nail, and it's guaranteed the Democrats win with that formula. And they have to stop taking corporate money and PAC money, which is what Justice Democrats are doing, by the way. Read our platform, justicedemocrats.com/platform, and read about our candidates on justicedemocrats.com, and to donate justicedemocrats.com/fight, because our candidates take no corporate money and PAC money. So they're principled, and they will fight for the people, and they will push for the policy substance that's in that platform. So I know this isn't a thought that's ever occurred to them, but perhaps the more pure you are with populist left ideas, the better you'll do, because those ideas are actually good ideas. Like, I love people who, I think it was Jimmy Dore who pointed this out, but it may have been somebody before him, I'm not sure. But they said the only people who are mad about a purity test are people who can't pass it. Ain't that the truth? And, like, think about it. People, I mean, that's a word that's been, like, you know, that's a concept that's been derided. Like, a purity test, a purity. That, all that is saying, oh, we believe in something, we stand for something, and we'll fight for something. That's all that means. Hey, we have things we actually believe in, and we're going to fight for. Can you imagine defending the opposite of that? Like, no, we don't have a purity test here. We don't actually believe in anything. We don't actually fight for anything. We don't believe in anything. I say that, but that's actually what the Democrats are doing. They just said it. They just said it recently. We covered the story. No, we're not going to have any tests or anything because we're a Big Tent party. Big Tent party. So in other words, I want Wall Street in the same party that I have people who have been screwed by Wall Street. In other words, I want Big Pharma and for-profit health insurance companies in the same tent as the people they screwed over. I want people who are far right in the same tent as the people who are far left. So what? So you admit you don't believe in anything. You're just an amorphous blob, and you want people to like you, but you don't actually stand for anything, and you won't fight for anything. Gee, I wonder why the Democrats keep losing. Howard Dean, you're the fucking problem, man. You're the problem. Now step the fuck aside and let us win. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. All right, next. Let's go to Maxine Waters. Congresswoman Maxine Waters went on The View and gave us her best breakdown of the Trump resistance. Let's watch.
What I want to ask you is, you know, you've been calling for Donald Trump's impeachment since the get-go.
Yes.
Because you saw how it was going.
Absolutely.
And so did we here, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, now with the grand jury and all this, do you think you're getting closer, or what do you think?
Absolutely. You know, I did start very early. As a matter of fact, I watched him doing the campaign,
mm-hmm.
and I've never seen anything like it before in my life.
Right.
Not only did he mock and mimic a disabled journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did he talk about grabbing women by their private parts, but he stalked Hillary in her face, called her crooked, called his colleagues names, Little Rubio, on and on and on.
Insulted John McCain's service.
Absolutely. Insulted John McCain. I've never seen an individual, particularly an adult, mature man or woman, talk to anybody like that, and especially if you're running for the President of the United States of America.
Yeah.
So I knew that he should not be president,
yeah.
and was shocked when he became president. And so, not only
became an alcoholic that night. I was drinking. Well, you think you were shocked?
Well, not only did I believe that he should not be president because he had no good values, et cetera, I took a look at the people around him, his allies,
mm-hmm.
and remember I dubbed them the Kremlin Klan because they were all connected to Russia or to the Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
or they were involved in some way with oil and connected with oil in Russia. So why are all these people with the same interest in one administration,
right.
allies around this president?
I would love to ask you that, Congresswoman Ante. Is there a smoking gun for you? What do you think is the connection between the Trump administration and Russia and Putin?
Well, here's what I believe. I believe that Putin really wants to get the sanctions lifted. so that he can drill into the Arctic. I think there are trillions of dollars involved with this, and I think this president made him believe he could do it. And so they certainly didn't want Hillary, because Hillary was, of course, on to Putin, did not like his tactics and the way that he, you know, basically ruled his country. And so it was important for them to get Trump elected to office, and it was important for them to get the commitment from him. Now, if you take a look at what has happened with the sanctions bill that we have passed, Putin is upset.
Yeah.
He thought that this president could actually get that done.
Why would he think that?
Because he told him that. He told him
that. But why would he even tell him that unless Putin has something on him?
Well, I don't know, but don't forget, this man will say anything, anytime. He's a liar, and he will say whatever he needs to say.
You said that Vice President Pence is already planning his inauguration. Is that a joke, or do you really?
It was a joke.
Okay.
What I wanted to do was needle them a little bit.
Okay. You know, do you think Pence will be better than Trump if he were?
And when we finish with Trump, we have to go and get Putin.
That's right.
He's next.
Putin or Pence?
Pence.
You mean
Pence. Wait, what? Okay, so, look, Maxine Waters as a person, she seems lovely. She seems great. And I'm not just saying that either. She seems like a genuinely warm, like, person who I'd love to be around. But in terms of, like, her strategy here, in being a resistance leader, it's basically as bad as you can possibly get. Now, I just want to be clear. I'm not saying this in defense of Trump. I'm saying this because I'm massively anti-Trump, and I want the Democrats to succeed, and I want them to do well, and I want them to beat him the next time around. But look at their entire conversation there. So, she goes through a list of why she's so anti-Trump. What's on that list? Oh, he mocked people. He spoke about grabbing women. He stalked Hillary, she said. He called Marco Rubio Little Marco, and he called Hillary crooked. Okay, so to the point of him calling Hillary crooked, yeah, because she is. Again, that's not a defense of Trump. Trump himself is massively crooked and incredibly corrupt and an idiot and a reality star buffoon, yada, yada. But, yeah, calling Hillary crooked is not something I have any problem with because it's true. It's accurate. Okay, the Little Marco thing. I don't give a shit. I don't get the fake politeness. We must have polite politicians who are kind to each other as they take away everybody's health care. No, like this cult of you must be polite in society. Like, no, this is a guy who's just saying out loud what a lot of people in the country have wanted to say for a long time. So, yeah, he's mocking Marco Rubio. Who hasn't wanted to mock Marco Rubio? I do. I do it all the time. So I don't give a shit about the Little Marco thing. He didn't stalk Hillary. He walked, like, close to her in a debate or something. Whoop-de-frickin-do. Yeah, the grab women by the pussy thing. That was a problem. Because remember, the problem wasn't him saying grab women by the pussy. The problem was him saying, I don't even wait. Meaning, you're not waiting for what? Presumably, consent. Yeah, I'm not waiting for consent. I'm just grabbing them, and then they let me do whatever I want because I'm a star. Well, how do you know they let you do whatever you want if you don't even wait? Your own words, not mine. I don't even wait. So that's a real problem, and that's a real issue. And by the way, women have come out afterwards and said, no, I wasn't okay with it, but he grabbed me by the pussy. So that's a problem. But most of the things she mentioned there were like, you know, politeness issues. Like, can you believe how rude he is? Yeah, Maxine, people can believe it, and that's why a lot of people voted for him. Because there really is a backlash in the country against what people view as an overly politically correct culture where they can't say what they want to say, they can't keep it real, and then Trump comes along and he does what they view as keeping it real. Now, most of the time, Trump actually isn't keeping it real, to be clear, but they think he is. Because, hey, man, he's letting it all hang out. He's speaking from the cuff. I speak from the cuff. So they were able to relate to that. They were able to connect to that. So what Maxine Waters is doing is taking one of the things that was actually Trump's strength and saying, well, isn't that horrible? Well, no, people actually, that resonated with people. They were tired of the fucking Jeb Bushes and I'm so polite in society, and I will wage wars and kill a lot of people as I am very polite and talk in a very mild-mannered way. I don't know, man, people are not, the manners thing is gone. With the younger generation, the manners thing is people, I don't give a fuck about your manners. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? So that's not, like, you're attacking him on something that's not going to resonate. It's, you're being tone deaf by saying, oh my God, can you believe he mocked Marco Rubio? Who gives a fuck? And then what does she do? She goes right on to Russia, Russia, Russia. Now, when she's pushed on that and say, what exactly is going on with Russia? She goes, well, you know, Putin, he wants sanctions relief, and Trump's going to give it to him. But hold on now. You didn't mention Trump didn't give it to him. Not only did they not give him the sanctions relief, they didn't allow the ExxonMobil oil deal. And then now, just recently, Trump signed new sanctions that you passed, that the Democrats and Republicans agreed on in a bipartisan way to sanction Russia, and Trump signed them. So he didn't relieve sanctions. He added new ones. And your argument is, Trump's obviously a Kremlin puppet. He's relieving sanctions. But he didn't. So that's not true. And again, you're talking Russia, 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 while the country's like, okay, I can't pay my fucking bills. I can't pay my bills. The cost of healthcare is too goddamn high. I don't have enough money to send my kid to school. I can barely keep the fucking lights on. Wouldn't it be nice if there were people in Washington fighting for me? And you're running around Russia, Russia, Russia. So disconnected. And then, boom, she hits us with it. The grand Democratic resistance plan. Well, first we're going to impeach Pence, and then we're going to impeach Trump, and then we're going to go after Pence. And then what, Maxine? And then you got Paul Ryan. Are you going to impeach him too? We're just going to impeach everybody? I don't know. We'll just keep going. I know what you're against. Everybody knows what you're against. What, Maxine, are you for? What are you for? That's the question. And polls have showed recently, people are on to the Democrats. They go, yeah, they're anti-Trump, but that's it. Well, they don't stand for anything. They're just anti-Trump. You're not going to win like that. You have to be anti-Trump, but also for something. That wacky idea. If you were for Medicare for All, which 61% of the American people are in favor of, you would win. If you were for free college, which 58% of the American people are in favor of, you would win. If you were for a living wage, which 80% of the American people are for, you would win. If you were for ending the wars, which only 17% of the American people still want to be in Afghanistan, and that was as of 2013, it's probably even fewer people now, you would win. So if you would fight on any of the policy issues, you would win. And the American people would know what you're for. Instead, they don't know what you're for, and the Democrats keep losing. Because all you have is Russia, 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 and I'm against Trump, and oh my God, isn't he a meanie. So look, again, as a person, Maxine Waters seems perfectly lovely. But in terms of her strategy, the Democrats keep losing when they act like this. Because look, man, let's be honest. Everybody in that studio, they're fine. They're fucking fine financially. So they get to sit around in their comfy studio and sip their fucking chai coffee or whatever, chai tea, whatever the fuck. And they get to talk about, oh, Russia, isn't this such a scandal with the president? Oh, yes, remember when he was really impolite and he said mean things about Hillary and he stalked Marco Rubio? Oh, yes, I do. Oh, that was so very impolite. Oh, yes. Meanwhile, Americans are hurting, and you need to tap into that anger and let people know we have solutions, and here are our concrete solutions. Every minute you spend saying Trump is bad, Trump is bad, Trump is bad, Russia, 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 is a minute you're not focusing on the solutions, so you're not tapping into that anger, and you're going to keep losing. JusticeDemocrats.com/platform. Learn what we're about. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. Donate. Our candidates take no corporate money, no PAC money, so we need you because we're principled and we're going to fight for real solutions. Okay. All right, let's take a final break. When we come back, I got a bunch of great stuff. Jerry Brown, governor of California, weighs in on the debate, and I'm going to tell you what happened at the Democratic Socialists of America conference just recently. So that's an interesting story. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
the plastic eyeballs. Spray paint the vegetables, dark blue stalls with the beefcake perennials. Kill the headlights and put it in neutral. Dark car flaming with the loser and the cruise control. Baby turn Reno with the vitamin D. Got a couple of couches. Sleep on the low seat. So keep seeing how the face to complain about a shotgun.
Governor Jerry Brown of California, and see what he thinks about the Democratic purity test. Chuck Todd brought Democratic Governor Jerry Brown of California on Meet the Press to talk about whether or not the party should have a litmus test. So let's watch his answer, and then we'll discuss.
What do you do? How do you tell the Democratic base that says, look, sometimes you got to compromise. So, for instance, the issue of abortion, we talked about culture. You've got some inside the Democratic Party, some major Democratic leaders, from a senator in New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, to others who think the Democratic Party should not support Democrats who are not pro-choice on abortion. But you have people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer who say, you know what, the Democrats need to be a big tent. How do you tell the Democratic base you got to learn to compromise?
Well, first of all, I don't know who this Democratic base is. It's shifting. The Democratic the segments of our party are highly differentiated. They're environmentalists. There are gun owners. There are pro-choice people. There are religious fundamentalists, not very many, but they're there. So I'd say, look, even on the abortion issue, it wasn't very long ago that a number of Catholic Democrats were opposed to abortion. So the fact that somebody believes today what most people believed 50 years ago should not be the basis for their exclusion. In America, we're not ideological. We're not like a Marxist party in 1910. We are big tent by the very definition. We're not ideological in the European sense of what political parties used to be. Even in Europe now, they don't have that same ideological purity. America is not one place. You can't let hot-button issues that work great in particular congressional districts one way or the other to be the guiding light for a national party that covers a very wide spectrum of belief.
So you don't believe there should be a litmus test on abortion, or is there an issue there should be one on for the Democrats?
I don't. Well, the litmus test should be intelligence, caring about as Harry Truman or Roosevelt used to call it, the common man. We're not going to get everybody on board, and I'm sorry, but running in San Francisco is not like running in Tulare County or Modoc, California, much less Mobile, Alabama. If we want to be a governing party of a very diverse, and I say diverse ideologically as well as ethnically, country, well, then you have to have a broader, a party that rises above the more particular issues to the generic, the general issue of making America great, if I might take that word.
Oh, boy, is that rich. This is how you know the Democrats are incredibly lost. That was a rambling, incoherent answer. And then at the end, what we've got to do is we've got to, you know, make America great. So I don't know what I believe. Confusion. I don't know what I believe. Confusion. Copy Trump's slogan. There was a time when Jerry Brown was a solid lefty when he argued for Medicare for All. Then he sold out. Now he's the Democratic governor of California. And there was talk about how he was really happy that Anthony Rendon killed the single-payer bill, the Medicare for All bill, in California because he didn't want to sign it. And look, there, his answer shows you how lost he is and how he's been involved in politics too long and the big donors have gotten to him. So he says at one point, look, you can't let hot-button issues be the guiding light for a national party. Yes, you can. He just says it. Like, yeah, you can't let hot-button issues be the guiding light for a national party. Yeah, of course you can, especially when it's a policy that has 80% approval, like a living wage. If the Democrats across the country all got on board with a living wage, that would help them win. Because 80% of the American people want it. 90% of the American people, 91% actually, want a universal background check for gun purchases. Even a majority of Republicans and a majority of NRA members. So you say hot-button issues can't be a guiding light for a national party. Of course it can. Why the fuck not? He just says these things as if, like, well, obviously that has wisdom, right? No, it's actually dead wrong. You know, what else? I don't know. Medicare for All, 61% favorability. You know, maybe if you run on ideas that are popular, people will like you, and you'll become popular. Ooh, wacky, I know. Then he says, what should the litmus test be? Chuck Todd asks him. He goes, intelligence? The fuck does that even mean, intelligence? What, are you going to make everybody who runs as a Democrat take an IQ test? Sorry, you didn't make the cut. Next. Caring about the common man. So wait a second. How do you square that with what you said before? You said, no, we can't let hot-button issues be the guiding light for a national party. But if you care about the common man, you are going to push for certain positions on hot-button issues because that's what would help the common man. See, he's just confused and lost, man. He's been involved in politics too long, and the strategists and the lobbyists have gotten to his head. And then the part where he's most wrong is he gets specific. He goes, look, you can't run in California on the same platform that you'd run in Mobile, Alabama. To which I say, yes, you can. Again, guys like Jerry Brown have had control of the party for decades. And what happened? 1,000 seats are lost. 1,000 Democratic seats are lost. Republicans hold the House of Representatives. They hold the Senate. They hold the majority of state legislatures. They hold the governorships. Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump, who had a 60% unfavorability rating on the day he won. Obviously, your strategy is wrong. All the evidence is there. You are wrong. You've been wrong every step of the way. But they still, you know, I think what we should do is stand for less stuff and be a big tent. A big tent. When your tent is so big that you don't stand for anything anymore, you're just going to lose, and you're not a big tent. You're just an amorphous blob. Your big tent has become an amorphous blob that wants Wall Street CEOs and the people screwed by Wall Street under the same tent. Health insurance executives and the people who lost loved ones because they didn't have health coverage, you want them to be under the same tent. You know how to build an actual big tent? By fighting for progressive, populist left ideas. Because then what kind of a big tent are you going to build? You're going to have people in Alabama, for example, who go, you know what, I might not agree with the Democratic position on abortion. I might not agree with the Democrats' position on marijuana, which, by the way, most people do because 60% want to legalize it. But I might not agree on some social issues, but I'm still going to vote for them because I know they're fighting for me when it comes to the economy. They want stronger unions. They want Medicare for all. They want to tax the rich. They want free college. So that's a real big tent, where you build a winning coalition, where you stand for something and you're clear about it, and people go, you know what, I might not agree with you on everything, but I know you haven't sold out, and I know you're looking out for me. And that's what Bernie Sanders offers people. Why do you think he does so well in the Midwest? Why do you think he does so well? People in the Midwest don't look at Bernie Sanders on social issues and go, damn, look at Bernie. He was fighting for trans rights before trans rights were a thing in the 1980s. I'm going to vote for him because of that. They go, I might not even agree with him on that issue, but I know he's fighting for me because he wants Medicare for all. He wants a living wage. He wants free college. He wants to tax the rich. He wants stronger unions. He wants my family to be financially secure. So I'm going to overlook some of the areas where I disagree with him because I know he's not corrupt. That's how you build a real big tent. The big tent the Democrats want, it's an amorphous blob of contradictions that stands for nothing. They still don't get it, man. They still don't fucking get it. And Chuck Todd brings this guy on as if he's some sort of voice of wisdom. And I love the framing, too, of the question. How do you tell the progressive base that they have to compromise? Why is it never framed the other way? Why is it never framed? How do you tell the corporatists and the neoliberals that they have to compromise and that they've lost running their strategy, so maybe they need to listen to the so-called purists? They never demand unity around populist left ideas that are overwhelmingly popular. It's always unity among shitty corporate candidates and neoliberal ideas. But the funny thing is we actually are unifying around populist left ideas. The actual left is. That's why you have, you know, Our Revolution and People for Bernie and Democratic Socialists and Justice Democrats and Brand New Congress and National Nurses United. That's why you have all these left-wing groups coming together, because we are unifying. Isn't it funny? The same people who they claim are incapable of unifying have unified better than them. It's just that they don't want to unify around actual popular ideas because they're too busy being beholden to their donors. So they have no clue what the fuck they're doing. We do. JusticeDemocrats.com. I think I've now said this in every segment from today. JusticeDemocrats.com. Our candidates take zero corporate money, zero PAC money. They stand for everything in that platform. JusticeDemocrats.com/platform. Come join us. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. We need you because we say no to corporate donors, no to big money, so we need your support and we need you. Okay. I got to hurry up here because I'm running out of time. You guys remember Blackwater? Blackwater is the mercenary army that we paid to invade a sovereign country that didn't attack us. Well, one of the only convictions of the war criminals in Blackwater just got overturned. Listen to this. A Blackwater Worldwide employee convicted of murdering 14 Iraqi civilians in Baghdad in 2007 will have his conviction vacated and be given a new trial. A U.S. federal appeals court ruled Friday. The court threw out a first-degree murder charge handed to the former security contractor Nicholas Slatin for allegedly opening fire unprovoked on a driver in the streets of Baghdad, leading to a firefight. The court also decided that three other former Blackwater contractors involved in the shooting and who had previously been sentenced to 30 years in prison on manslaughter and firearm charges would be resentenced. Wow. The court held that the district court abused its discretion in denying Slatin's motion to sever his trial from that of his co-defendants and therefore vacates his conviction and remands for a new trial. Two of the judges in the case, Karen LaCraft and Henderson and Janice Rogers Brown, wrote that we by no means intend to minimize the carnage attributable to Slow, Heard, and Liberty's actions. Their poor judgments resulted in the deaths of many innocent people. But they did call the contractor's 30-year sentence a cruel and unusual punishment and urged for a more nuanced approach to sentencing rather than using a sledgehammer. Okay, so Paul Dickinson, the lawyer who represented six of the victims, went on Twitter, and here's what he said. Blackwater murder conviction thrown out, other sentences overturned. I represented six of the victims of these crimes. Ali was 9 years old when he was shot in the head in backseat of his father's SUV. His brain fell on the pavement in Nisour Square on September 16th, 2007. That's just one example. He went on, by the way, to give more examples. I've read about this incident in detail. Jeremy Scahill, in his great book Blackwater, went into every excruciating detail based on all the evidence. And it was a slaughter. You had innocent people at a market, and Blackwater troops rolled in and started murdering people. Started gunning everybody down, everybody in sight. And then in a rare instance of justice in one of these cases where they were found guilty, now they say, on a technicality. Funny how that works. On a technicality, we're going to have to throw it out. What? They say, well, look, you tried all of them together when one of them wanted to be separate. And what are you going to do? It's cruel and unusual. No, you know what's cruel and unusual? What these motherfuckers did to the innocent people who were going about their business in Nisour Square. There's hardly any justice against the Empire. I mean, that was one of the things why Chelsea Manning's leaks were so important, because after those leaks that showed the U.S. military gunning down civilians and journalists and then laughing about it, after those leaks, you had the government of Iraq said, the only way we're going to let the U.S. continue to stay here is if we get to try war criminals in our courts, because they didn't trust our courts. They didn't trust military tribunals or our courts. Gee, I wonder why. Well, now you see, especially with Blackwater, Blackwater's private mercenary army, so they can get tried in our courts. Look what happened. So that led to not being able to get a status of forces agreement, which led to the temporary pullout of Iraq, and then obviously we went back in later, but it was because of Chelsea Manning releasing those facts that led to the disagreement between the Iraqi government and the U.S. government, which led to the temporary withdrawal of U.S. troops. Gee, isn't that crazy? The Empire invades a country that didn't attack us, slaughter hundreds of thousands of civilians, and then there's very little justice afterwards. It's almost like we shouldn't be an empire, and we shouldn't invade countries that didn't attack us. But I know, crazy far-left unicorn fairy dust something something. Okay. Democratic Socialists of America had their conference recently. They grew to 25,000 members, which is a superb accomplishment. Congratulations to them. And, you know, Michael Tracy made a good point about this on Twitter that I haven't thought about, at least not for a while I haven't thought about it. The fact is that with left-wing activism, the media never really covers it. They never really discuss it. Whereas right-wing activism, they find that inherently interesting and they cover it all the time. So if there's like an alt-right conference, there's 1,000 cameras there and people, ooh, look, ooh, ooh. Now, granted, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and at the alt-right conference, a lot of these people just came out as neo-Nazis. I mean, Richard Spencer talking about Lugenpresse and people in the audience doing the Sieg Heil salute and stuff. So I get that that deserves a lot of coverage, but it deserves a lot of coverage, too, when it's like populist left grassroots activism where people are fighting for good things. But no, the media never views left-wing activism as inherently interesting. It views right-wing activism as inherently interesting. And you need to, like, try to trick the media into covering left-wing activism and take it seriously. And so Michael Tracy made that point that, look, at the Democratic Socialist Convention, there's not nearly enough, like, media cameras. If you go to a right-wing convention, oh, my God, it's everywhere. Look at the Tea Party. Tea Party got coverage endlessly. Endlessly. Okay, so listen to what they did at the Conference for Democratic Socialists of America. As Congress tries to criminalize BDS, boycotts, divestments, and sanctions, the Democratic Socialists of America endorse it. So according to people in the room, 90% of people in the room supported it to the point where they didn't even need to do a one-by-one vote. It was just so overwhelming when they said, those in favor of BDS say aye. Everybody said aye. She said okay. So that's added to their platform. Now, I want you to think about that. A room full of the populist left. I mean, this is the left-wing base here. 90% of them said yes. You can't get a single Democratic politician to say yes to that. Not a single one. Even Bernie Sanders, who's the strongest on the issue of Israel-Palestine, he is against BDS. Now, to be fair to Bernie, he oftentimes comes out strongly against illegal settlements and what's going on in the occupied territories, but he's not in favor of BDS. He's crystal clear. He said that to Dina Takruri recently in an interview. We covered the story. So look at that disconnect. But this, we see this on so many issues. It's so sad. You know, 80% of the American people want a living wage. We don't have a living wage, and we don't even have that many people pushing for it. 91% want a universal background check on gun purchases. Nobody's even talking about it. None of the politicians are pushing for it. You have a really favorable position among the populist left, the left-wing base. Hey, we want to do BDS, boycotts, divestments, and sanctions, to stop Israel from doing land grabs, illegal under international law, stop the occupation, stop the apartheid state. Not a single Democratic politician in sight is in favor of it. Isn't that crazy, man? It just goes to show you how out of touch the politicians are with what the people who are their base are supposed to stand for. Wait, what? That didn't make sense. It goes to show you how out of touch the politicians are from what the people in their base want. And wouldn't it be nice to have politicians who unapologetically stood up for things like that? I mean, Justice Democrats, for example, we talk about it all the time. In our platform, we have a ban on arming human rights violators. That's such a simple idea. Never gets discussed. Nobody brings it up. The Justice Democrats, as far as I know, we're the only platform that discusses that. You know, maybe you would have seen it in like a Jill Stein platform or something. But the idea is, oh, you want to stop, you want to cut back on the violence and wars around the world? Stop arming human rights violators. Stop sending weapons to Saudi Arabia as they massacre people in Yemen. Stop arming Israel-expand settlements and do bomb fests of Gaza where they kill at least 80% civilians, including 500 children. Seems like a simple enough idea, right? But it's like pulling teeth to get politicians to do these and support these basic reforms. So credit to Democratic Socialists of America. They're fighting the good fight here. And by the way, that's why we've joined up with them and teamed with them on the People's Platform. Over a dozen populist left groups have gotten together on the People's Platform to push for the People's Platform, to try to make Democratic politicians come on board with a bunch of ideas, living wage, Medicare for all, free college, and some others. So that's why we're working with them, because in many ways we agree with them. And these are the voices that need to be heard, and these are the voices that the politicians in Washington need to represent. Okay. My fucking throat, man. Giving me issues. Okay, let me try to squeeze in. I really only have time for one more, but I'm going to try to do two. Reuters wrote about a problem that's not often discussed. Check this out. Toxic waste from U.S. pot farms alarms experts. So they go on to say that thousands of acres in California are so toxic and polluted that simply touching plants has landed officers in the hospital. A lot of fertilizer is used in the making of marijuana. That's led to bacteria problems in waterways. Growers use illegal and dangerous pesticides. That's a huge problem. And the cleanup for this, they say, is going to cost California up to $100 million. Yeah, that's all a huge problem. And here's what's not discussed in the context of this, what the solution is. Here's the answer, guys. Shocker. Legalize it. Anybody who brings this up should have to bring up that next point, because the same shit happened with alcohol. When you make alcohol illegal, you push it underground to the black market, people make it in a dangerous way. In fucking bathtubs sometimes they made alcohol. Sometimes they make toxic batches, a bad batch of alcohol, and people die because there's no regulation keeping it safe and enforcing rules and safety standards on how to make it. Okay, it's still illegal at a federal level, so they have to fucking hide in the forest in California to fucking make it, and they're creating all this toxic waste. Yes, if you legalize it and take it out from the black market and bring it into the sunlight, then you have factories and you have regulation and you have high-quality procedures to not use illegal pesticides. You can use illegal pesticides. You can make everything, do everything right. It's almost like any problem you bring up in the drug markets could be solved by legalizing, taxing, and regulating. But people rarely bring it up because it's counterintuitive. It really is counterintuitive to think, oh, there's a problem with growing marijuana. Well, then we should make it legal to grow marijuana. But that's the answer, because when it's illegal, it's underground, you have to cut corners, you have to use whatever you can get your hands on to make it, as opposed to if it's legal, totally above ground, sunlight, transparency, you can regulate it properly and efficiently. So that's the answer. Nobody discusses it, but they should. Let's legalize, tax, and regulate on a federal level and solve this problem among a zillion others that those problems only exist because it's illegal. Okay. Final story of the day. I got a minute left, but this is going to go a little longer. Eric Bolling is now out at Fox News. Damn. Why? Well, he's a man and he works at Fox News, so would you like to take a guess? This is from NPR. They say, high-profile Fox News host Eric Bolling has been suspended after HuffPost reported on Friday that he sent unwanted lewd texts with an unsolicited photo of male genitalia to at least three female colleagues. Bolling co-hosts the Fox News Specialists, a daily news show, they use the word news here very loosely, and talk show, and is the sole host of Cashin' In, a national business analysis program which airs on Saturday mornings. According to HuffPost, the women are Bolling's current and former Fox colleagues. The only news site reported that it spoke with, the online news site reported that it spoke with 14 anonymous sources in reporting these allegations, and that recipients of the lewd photo confirmed its content. The law firm Paul Weiss is investigating for Fox and parent company 21st Century Fox. Bolling's attorney, Michael J. Bow, tells NPR that the allegations are untrue, that he sent no unsolicited communication, suggesting but not stating that there were consensual exchanges. Bo sent NPR this statement: "The anonymous, uncorroborated claims are untrue and terribly unfair. We intend to fully cooperate with the investigation so that it can be concluded and Eric can return to work as quickly as possible." Well, I don't know if that last part will be happening. Apparently, on his roundtable show, they removed his name on the Twitter feed. They're kind of scrubbing the site of everything Eric Bolling related. They didn't even run. He had recorded a show that was supposed to air on, like, Saturday. He recorded it, and then they didn't show it on Saturday, so they axed it. So, not looking too good there for Eric Bolling. Yeah, in terms of guilt or innocence, they'll find out. They'll find out. They'll find out if the pictures were consensual, there's no problem here. And in fact, I would feel bad for the guy that he's, you know, his dirty laundry is being shown in public here when it was consensual. So if it was consensual, obviously no problem at all. But if he's sending unsolicited dick pics to people, that's so fucking creepy. That's so creepy. And they said it was three women that he worked with? Damn, Eric, what are you doing, man? Imagine he sent it as a group text. Hey, guys, do we have those stories ready for today's show? We got to make sure we have everything organized. Anyway, here's my dick. Imagine he did it as a group. I don't know why that's funny to me, but it is. Of course, he probably didn't. But, Eric, geez, man. Have you ever heard the phrase, don't shit where you eat? Yeah, that means you don't look at every woman you work with and say, yeah, I'm going to go after them. Yeah, don't they want to see my dick? They don't want to see your dick. Guys, here's a pro tip for you. A woman doesn't want to see your dick unless she asks to see your dick. Like, or if somehow you bring it up in conversation and she's like, yeah, I want to see it. Okay, then that's different. But your default assumption shouldn't want to be everybody wants to see your fucking gangly flesh tube. Dicks are not attractive. They're not attractive. I don't think most women look at a dick pic in the way that men look at pictures of naked women, where we're like, oh, yeah, that's hot. I forget who said it, but there's like an old joke. You know what they say, if a guy sees one woman naked, you want to see them all naked. It's like the opposite, I think at least, for women, where it's like, yeah, I didn't. Like, they'll tolerate your dick. They'll tolerate it for the purposes of reproduction. And maybe, you know, if they like you and they want to make you happy, sure. But it's not like women are sitting there like, God, dick pic, dick pic, dick pic. I got to get a dick pic. Guys, where are so? Can somebody send me a goddamn dick pic? I've been sitting here all day waiting for a dick pic. I don't think that's very common, Eric. But he's out there like, shit, man, I got to show everybody what I'm working with here. Forward my dick pic to, send it to these three female colleagues. I'm going to tag Hannity in this bitch. Maybe I'll send it to O'Reilly and Judge Napolitano. Oh, Eric Bolling. Can't stop showing his dick. All right. Anyway, in all seriousness, I hope they figure out if it was consensual or not, and then they take appropriate action. And we'll see as it unfolds. Okay. All right, guys, out of time. I love you, and we will be back tomorrow. You know the deal. Everybody enjoy the rest of your day. Mwah.